From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Pacific Heights.
I live in Fremont.
I live in Russian Valley in the Richmond District.
I live in the Inner Sunset.
Coming up, East Oakland High School students help their new immigrant classmates adjust.
I guess they see themselves in the future once they talk to me.
Then how art can respond to the political moment.
Artists, I think, have an obligation to keep us all dreaming, to keep the engine of American dream humming.
And San Francisco rapper Adam Vida tells us about the evolution of his songwriting.
It was only as I realized after over time that what people really want to hear is you being yourself. You know, they want to hear you sharing a piece of yourself.
Being heard today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. The surprising results of last week's presidential election have caused reactions ranging from the ecstatic to the terrified. One community that's experiencing fear and uncertainty is the country's estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants, many of whom are Central Americans fleeing violence and instability in Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. The Bay Area, and Alameda County in particular, has taken in a lot of migrants who are seeking asylum, including unaccompanied minors, kids who make it here without their parents or families. After Los Angeles County, Alameda has taken in the largest number of these children in the state. Oakland School District has scrambled to try to provide extra support for these new students, but the adjustment hasn't been easy. Earlier this year, KALW's Hannah Kingsley-Ma and Liza Veal spent time reporting at Castlemont High in East Oakland, which received more than 200 newcomer students. We are going to listen now to an excerpt of their award-winning documentary called Seeking Asylum and learn how Castlemont students dealt with the influx of newcomers at their school.
Newcomers have been enrolling at Castlemont since the beginning of the year, and not all the existing students were exactly welcoming. Teacher Carrie Haslinger says the newcomers get a lot of resources, like free school supplies.
And then the mainstream Oakland kids, also marginalized, disenfranchised population, are like, why are they getting all this stuff, you know, and feeling like sort of an anger.
And so the newcomers became targets for bullying. Teachers like Ms. Haslinger or Ms. Hass tried to curb the problem by explaining why newcomers were here.
Over in the computer lab, some students bring this up.
I mean, Ms. Hass just told me like all the stuff that they went through, like how they used to like live and they had to get away from their parents. Some people had to leave their parents out there.
Basically was trying to get away from violence. And if you bullying them, you just showing them like, maybe I need to get away from here too.
Dominique Smith and Sauna Roy are juniors at Castlemont. They say the newcomers get picked on for the usual high school stuff, like their clothes.
And the way they dress.
The stuff that they wear is not like not what like people would, yeah. They have to be like, what are those?
They make fun of their shoes. What are those, they say.
Dominique and Sana say the newcomers just act different. They show a lot of enthusiasm.
No lie, though, at the bus stop across the street, when it's time to get on the bus, like, they will run you down, like, oh, no, like, they be too close, like, can I get some space?
And then in the lunchroom, they be all packed up in the lunch
like,
line, like.
Run to get lunch, like, they finna bite it down.
I'd be like, it's good. I ain't even hungry no more.
Bullying got so bad at Castlemont that some newcomers were skipping school to avoid the problem. But in the past year, things have really changed. And Ms. Hass says a lot of that is because of student allies.
The biggest advocates for the newcomers have been kids who came here when they were children.
Like this one group of boys that took it upon themselves to defend the newcomers.
Us four, we're known around the school and we have a good reputation in this school.
That's senior Ismael Hernandez. He and his three friends saw what was happening and they intervened.
The word got around that newcomers were getting bullied and people didn't like that. And well, we didn't like that.
First, they said they tried reasoning with the students that were doing the most bullying. Some sophomores, Latino like them. Here's another one of the four, Ray Ramirez.
You know, we would just tell them sometimes, like, straight up, like, guys, like, you shouldn't guys do this. You're making them feel, like, suicidal, depressed, making them want to leave the school.
And then they came to the newcomers with advice for how to avoid getting targeted.
We basically gave them a little, like, workshop one day, an advisory about that.
a workshop about what they were doing to provoke the other students.
Yeah, the newcomers are really playful, so they like running a lot around, like, and I don't blame them, you know, they got their freedom here because maybe back home they didn't have that freedom and that enjoyment. So we talked to them, we're like, oh guys, it's okay to have fun, maybe at lunch, you know, maybe not during passing periods, you shouldn't be running around the hallways because here people care a lot about their shoes and maybe you might step on them and they might get mad and start problems. You also shouldn't be looking at them for so long because people here take it as offense, as like you're trying to start something with them.
I know it sounds ridiculous, but this is how the streets roll.
Gradually, the bullies started to back down. Ray and Ismail think other students were catching on that the newcomers bring something special.
Right now, like every lunch, we always play soccer with them. I mean, they're pretty cool. They're like, if you get to know them, they're pretty cool.
Ray and Ismail wanted to help the newcomers because they remembered being in the same position themselves. They came from Mexico as younger kids, and they got bullied at first, too. Oakland is their home now, and they rep it, but the newcomers remind them of their past.
Like, it reminds me like where I'm from, or how they act. It's funny, I remember how I used to act like that, and I did change. It just reminds me both ways.
Ms. Haas says the school has depended on its Spanish-speaking students to help get newcomers adjusted. One student, Abril, helps translate Haslinger's classes. Abril came to the U.S. when she was little. She says the newcomers look to her as an example of what their lives might become.
I guess they see themselves in the future. Once they talk to me, I can be here for long too. Like, if she learned English and like she's helping us, like maybe in the future I'll be doing the same thing.
She says the newcomers are ambitious about school and learning English.
They're like so competitive, but I like that. They're like, oh, I bet you didn't know this, when I was like, okay, chill.
According to Abril, the backlash to the bullying has been stronger than the bullying itself.
We stand up for them. Like, yeah, we all come together. I guess it's united us more.
Maybe you're thinking she means it's united the Latino students at Castlemont. But no.
Not Latinos, but like African-American people, like, because this school is very diverse in a way, like people of color, and you know. So I think it united us more.
A lot of kids echo this idea, that the influx of newcomers has created a challenge, but Castlemont has risen to it. One student said that because the newcomers think of this place as a sanctuary, she appreciates it more too. She didn't realize how much she'd lost her motivation at school until she saw the newcomers fighting to be here.
But clearly, that's not the whole story for a lot of kids. Like Dominique from earlier, she didn't seem especially concerned for the newcomers. Before heading for class, she shrugged and said, "We have our own struggles here.
People be dying every day here."
That's not a huge exaggeration. Oakland has one of the highest murder rates in the country. For Dominique, it's hard to see why violence in Central America warrants special treatment over here.
I don't know, like when you say people die every day out here, like...
They do. They get shot, killed, all that stuff. Yeah. They don't get special treatment but a funeral.
Do you know people that have been killed or like, yeah, you hear about people?
Been shot.
Yeah. Like people that you know from like your neighborhood or people that you know from school? Or...
No, people that I know, like my friends. I get my friends died this year.
Dominique is clear. She hopes the newcomers are safer here than wherever they left. But she also knows they're not the only kids at Castlemont that have it tough.
You want to make any newcomer friends?
Nope, because I can't teach them how to speak English.
Why can't you?
Because I barely know how to speak proper English myself.
What are you talking about? You express yourself. You know how to express yourself.
Nope, I'm learning as they learn.
That was an excerpt of the radio documentary Seeking Asylum, which was produced by KALW News earlier this year and which just won the award for Best Radio Feature of the Year from the Society of Professional Journalists of Northern California. You can listen to the full program by Liza Veal and Hannah Kingsley Ma at our website, kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. For some of the kids in that last story, soccer, or football, as the rest of the world knows it, can be a source of joy and release in a complicated world. Bay Area theater artist, writer, and educator Mark Bamudi-Joseph knows the feeling. A child of Haitian immigrants, he grew up playing the beautiful game, and over the years, he's spent a lot of time watching, playing, and thinking about it. But he's never made a show about it until now. Bamuti's newest multidisciplinary work is called Pelota. It explores the complexities of soccer as a conduit for global joy and global corruption through poetry, dance, video, and live music. KALW's Jen Chien sat down with him to talk about the piece.
So first, your piece looks at a whole mess of things, and I mean that in the most excited way. So some things that you touch on in the show are masculinity and parenthood, immigration, police violence, apartheid. But the overarching message that I got out of the show is getting at the idea of Black joy and Black love and Black life being lived in the face of a culture that wants to destroy it or erase it.
Yeah.
So and that's something that you have dealt with in your work before. I'm wondering, why talk about it through soccer? Why football?
Well, the question of freedom is up in the air for many of us, I think. It's existential, it's political, it's spiritual. Is freedom less about a political paradigm and more about the unencumberedness of actually being outside of the body, the kind of ecstasy that one might experience in prayer or in love or in the euphoria of sports. And so when I think about the thing that connects me to this freedom impulse, it isn't so much political, it really is emotional. And soccer, global football, that's the place where if I consider my youth and consider just kind of a personal biography or trajectory of freedom, scoring goals, the weightlessness, the racelessness that I feel on the soccer pitch, that's what freedom is to me.
And when you say racelessness, are you... Are you talking about like that almost spiritual feeling that people talk about where your individual beingness is erased?
Yeah, there's this whole soliloquy in the piece where I say I'm not a child of immigrants. This is not hip hop under the watch of Ed Koch. I am current. My blood is goal scorer cold like New York autumns used to be. The hum of my own breathing in the wind is Hendrix's Ghost Riden Symphony. You know, that's not the thing that I get when I am at the ballot box. And that's not, right?
Yeah.
Right.
A different feeling of
exactly,
self.
Exactly, exactly. As I walk through the world, I'm very much in my body, but I love to think about the notion of using your body in order to leave it. I think through this work, what I'm trying to explore is this connection between being highly politicized and demographically identified and also being other. And for me, sport is the bridge, or the body in motion is a bridge to help us get to that almost transcendent place. Yeah.
You talk about your son a fair bit in the piece.
Yes.
You talk about his teenagehood, but you also reflect on him at different ages and then on yourself and your own childhood and coming of age. Was being a parent part of the genesis of this piece?
I almost always. I mean, I have a 14-year-old son, I have an 11-year-old daughter, and I am constantly viewing the world, not necessarily through their eyes, but through the eyes of someone who is commissioned and mandated to keep them safe. Now, my son, as a 14-year-old brown boy, almost 15, walking through the world, he is just about to enter the prime of his hunted years. And now he begins to turn a shade of reasonable doubt. And I'm very aware of that. And so the piece in this moment where a 12-year-old boy like Tamir Rice or a 16-year-old boy like Trayvon Martin. You know, we are in this moment where I see how my son is suspect in a new way. And so, you know, even if in this exploration of political freedoms, I'm very, very concerned about how to make these bridges so that there is some element of joy, that his life, the matter of Black life, is not framed exclusively by rage or grief or loss. So all those things are certainly at the center of the work. The actual genesis of the work was inspired when I was visiting South Africa in 2009, right before the World Cup on African soil. And, you know, I noticed the investment in the infrastructure in Cape Town and Johannesburg. Well, not so much in the infrastructure, but on the stadiums, not so much roads or education.
The infrastructure of the World Cup.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. And we saw the same thing in Brazil in 2014, which leads to massive displacement and emphasizes certain pre-existing financial and social inequities. But South Africa maintains such a mythical place, certainly in my consciousness, and I think in the world's consciousness, as, you know, the kind of 20th century expression of race-based division. So taking this, taking kind of a cue from what was happening in South Africa, noticing and being provoked by this irony and of a kind of legacy of apartheid being reinforced in some way by this sport, which gives so many people joy and freedom, I had to start writing and investigating, and Piloto was the result.
The piece does go to South Africa, to Brazil, to East Oakland, to Haiti, where your family is from.
Yes.
How did the travel and how does that awareness of global issues affect the show?
The thesis is that this is a global game. This is the one thing that the world can agree upon. In soccer, all 22 players have to contribute. Everybody touches the ball. And ultimately, the teams that are most successful are the teams that are able to involve everyone. It's a sport that asks us to be in the practice of egalitarianism.
You're talking about a few subjects that maybe in a Venn diagram might not cross that often. People who are interested in sports, people who are interested in politics, people who are interested in racial justice, people who are interested in dance and theater.
So that's my Venn diagram right there.
Right.
That's where I live. That's where I live.
Like I'm saying, I don't know if I have a question about that, but maybe like, what do you want to do by bringing all these things together?
First, there's a way that I think that we other art that is anathema to, I think, how we actually culturally exist. Artists move culture forward. Artists are more central to cultural expression and understanding. Artists name our culture. Artists, I think, have an obligation to keep us all dreaming, to keep the engine of American dream humming, because who else? Similarly, athletes are gladiators in service of our collective allegory and metaphor. You know, there's a way that...
That's a great sentence.
Athletes, thanks. freestyling. but it's true, right? There's a way, let's say when you see a football player, an American football player, get tackled, you both ouch and cringe, and also your personal adrenaline rises a little bit. You know, watching the Warriors, you know, Steph Curry at the line, you know,
when
game time, crunch time situation. When they win, I win. My hands are sweating. How can you hold the ball and hit a free throw? You know, so there are these ways, I think, that athletes and artists are in service of our other selves, right? They are extended metaphors for the ways that we can't dream ourselves to be yet, and also for the ways, for exactly the ways that we want to be.
That was multidisciplinary artist Mark Bamuti Joseph speaking with KALW's Jen Chien. Pelota premieres at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts on Friday and runs all weekend. All the details are at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Like Mark Bamuti Joseph, San Francisco rapper Adam Vida is a first-generation American who uses his art to explore the joys and complexities of his city and community. In this installment of Bay Area Beats, Adam Vida, formerly known as A1, talks about the evolution of his sound.
Both my parents are immigrants, so my mom came to this country when she was a young teen from Italy, and my dad came from West Africa, from Senegal. So I'm first generation American, and on top of that, I grew up in a city like San Francisco, which when I was growing up was extremely diverse and just weird. Like on a daily walk through the city, you'll see homeless people, drug addicts, rich people, hippies, skaters, artists, taggers, every type of diversity of people. So I think that's kind of like reflects on my lyrics. I got my earth straight and I got my mind right. I had a dream of headlining on a world tour. The sad thing is less likely than the world war. Just trying to make it to the top from the first floor. Like trying to walk on water without a surfboard. My music is really comes from like a glass is half full standpoint. You know what I'm saying? Like, Things, though things can get bad, it's all right to have fun. It's all right to be human, to show all emotions, and you know, that's what I like. I like to spread positivity through my lyrics, but I also like to keep it real. California bear and y'all looking like the gummy one from hating on a player, man, say it ain't so. First time in a minute I'm feeling optimistic from really living even though. My least favorite part about making music is everything except for the finished product. I don't like recording. I don't like writing. But I love performing and I love hearing the finished song. Sometimes it takes me weeks to write one song. So I think my process is really slow and tiresome. I get tired. I don't really like writing because I feel like it really wears me out. That damn homie. Set up by the San Fran, homie. They been sleeping on me, I'm the Sandman. Now I'm about to hit him in the head like Bam Bam. Show me one youngin' that can do it like the man can. I'ma have to put him on ice, then run him over twice in the damn Zamboni or a black man, solely or a Pontiac Trans Am. Understand, not a pimp or a player, but I think the hardest thing with lyrics and expressing yourself is sort of like expressing your insecurities, you know? Because it's like when you rap, you're talking to people. And most of the people that hear you, if it's their first time listening to you, they're strangers. So you're basically letting strangers in on your life, you know? It's not something you would do at a party. Like, you wouldn't meet someone at a party for the first time and then tell them about your entire life story, like, you know, how you might on a rap song. So it was really, like, difficult for me to be myself, I'll say, in rap. You know, when I first started, I was rapping a lot about, like, what I thought rap was supposed to sound like, which is, like, being hard, you know, fighting and drugs and money and girls and that kind of thing. Rehabilitate the inmates. Let the man them gain some skills for real. Can't let these men harm me. I'm human. Sometimes I... It was only as I realized after over time that what people really want to hear is you being yourself. You know, they want to hear you sharing a piece of yourself. My mind is my army. My army. Somebody
please remind them. That was San Francisco rapper Adam Vida, formerly known as A1. His latest single is called I'm Juiced, and that piece was produced by Todd Whitney. And if you know a local artist who's just got to be on Cross Currents, let us know about them. Email us at news@kalw.org or connect with us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. And that's our show for today. The team includes Jürgen Klemm, Leela Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Olivia Henry, Chris Hoff, Jeremy Ju, Ted Muldoon, Lisa Morehouse, Carrie Spivak, and Andrew Stelzer. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Today's show was engineered by James Rowlands. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by Jay Somm, a name chosen from an online baby name generator that translates as Victory Moon. Jay Somm crosses the bridge from Oakland on Friday night to perform at Brick and Mortar Music Hall in San Francisco. The music starts at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. You're